Welcome to Game of Nodes, a weekly podcast from independent validator teams. Welcome to Game of Nodes, a somewhat less than weekly podcast from independent validator teams. We're back from our summer break. StreamYard has added lots of new features. Docs, the software that we use to do the podcast right there. And we now have lost the ability, I think, to pre-rug at the start of the show because it's now clever enough to actually just always sequence the intro. And it was a technological and understanding limitation of ours that led to our habit of talking when one of us had already started the recording, which is obviously a feature of the 100 and... Well, I walked into that
Does
one.
That feel yeah. Does that feel better? Does that feel more natural now?
Welcome to Game of Nodes, a somewhat weekly validator podcast from independent validator teams. We're back from our summer break. We're raring to go. Very bullish indicator for the market, for the whole economy, really. I think, you know, things have maybe been a little bit not on track of late. It's time for us to get things back on track. So we said, let's get on a call. Let's thrash it out. Here we go. Schultzy, yeah, I got to say, I thought you had a massive home lab behind you last time I saw you on video. Has that moved to a secure location?
A less secure location. That's in the garage now, actually. it puts out 500 watts or so constantly, which means I then need to cool 500 watts. And this is the top stairs upstairs. Yeah. And so the AC was just like, I'm not dealing with this. Not happening.
So now it's in the garage.
So. That's what happened there. Yeah.
Well, you got a warm garage in winter then. You could
There's no humidity out there or anything, right? You know humidity in the Pacific Northwest. Should be fine. Fine.
Yeah, sure.
That's right.
Actually I ran so much shit in the garage for years. It doesn't really it's fine.
Yeah, but
it's a little bit hotter than I want it to be, but the temperatures are still safe. So I'm like, meh, it'll be fine.
So that mini rack is 500 watts? It was like a 10-inch rack, right?
It was, yeah, but I had, you know, 7 servers on it, and I had other like periphery things attached to it, and then
that's a lot,
yeah.
Dry, I had a lot. There spinners in there, or is it all SSD? Yeah. And oh, okay.
Well, so I had the NAS right next to it, and so I'm including that into it. So the entire lab got moved.
I gotcha.
But
the lab. Mm-hmm. The lab sounds very more jealous. That sounds a lot more formal. Yeah, the lab sounds formal. Like summer break. That's also
exactly. Also, we look at this like shaved, like we're coming back fully professional, fully loaded. I took this t-shirt. Actually, can't see it on the podcast. Sorry for those listening later on podcast players. I took this t-shirt to the summer conferences, and I was expecting it to kind of wind people up, and it just didn't.
What is it?
What is that? An open paren?
It's just one open paren, and then nothing else. Which I wore to a conference several years ago, and I got somebody. Somebody clocked it across a room and they were having a conversation. I could see that it irritated them. And they stopped their conversation, walked through a room of several hundred people to me and just shook their head. They were like shaking. They were so angry. And they were just like, you're a monster. Why would you do this in a room of people? Like I'm the only one that's come over to say to you, but like, you're just annoying people for no reason. And I was like, yes. And they were like, no, but you're just winding people up. Like this is such an effective way of winding. Like it's just not nice. And I was like, okay, sorry, man.
Yeah.
I hope you have a good rest of your conference. Anyway,
so it is.
So I wore it to a crypto conference, and it goes to show how few technical people there are at a crypto conference, because none of the marketing managers that I met were in the slightest worried about it while they were trying to sell me bare metal servers. So. and get me to pay for our company to participate in testnets or whatever it was. There's a lot of weird vibes at conferences at the moment. A lot of it is, hey, you're an independent validator. How would you like to give us money? And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I may not be the sharpest businessman in the rack of business knives, but that analogy didn't work at all. But I know you're not supposed to hand out money to participate.
Speaking of bare metal node providers, we just had one that I use show up in a blockchain Slack group which I think you guys are both in.
Oh, is that? Yeah. I saw the name. Yeah, I saw the name. I was like, is that the same? Is that just a coincidence?
I do not. I don't like that shit.
That's weird.
I don't like that shit. If our partners start turning into our competitors, then they're not going to be our partners anymore. Like, I'm not sure why that communication is there. And like, it doesn't help anything. And it doesn't, like, it's really weird to have that. I've had that happen elsewhere too. Right. Not with that specific vendor, but with other vendors where, like, I don't want to call anybody out, but like, there's a South American vendor that shows up everywhere, like in all these different types of.
That's what I was going to say too.
Yeah. They show up in like all these different things. And like, it's good for them because it's marketing and they're basically, it's like a lead generation, right? Because they're like, if anybody bitches about a node, they're probably in the DMs like, hey man, right? I got something for you, which I don't like, number one, because it just adds more centralization on that. And everybody, I think node operators should be in the responsible for finding their own partners and figuring that shit out, right? But when they show up in chat, like I didn't ask the team why the fuck this is. And so anyway, it's weird, right? Like why? It's happening more and more. Hardware showing up in these channels.
I do wonder if it's part and parcel of the thing that we were talking about before the break, which is the kind of the, what are you going to call it? Like a mergers and acquisitions trend, or like a market concentration drive on the validator side of the business, which partly, you know, adverse business conditions, but I think it's also partly like market maturity or whatever, like where there's money, it's being squeezed out and it's becoming more of a margins game. But I think that's also driving it from the other end. Cause honestly, if you've got like 100 independent validators who are all running hardware and they're all paying for it, great. But those vendors now are like, well, if a lot of the validators that are making like serious money, you know, not like us chumps, are like a smaller group of node providers, often institutional, then those bare metal providers are like, well, look, it must be doubly the case that if they're like, okay, a lot of our potential customers are now literally institutional players that have a few engineers and ops people in the building, you know, they're not necessarily going to have like a huge existing pre-sales funnel or like something where, you know, they're just straight in the door with that kind of a player. So maybe it's just straight up that they're like, well, we need to get in with those players. And the most likely point of contact is the foundation. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I get it from their perspective. I don't understand from a foundation perspective. Like, I don't know. I mean, they have had this provider has had like 3 or 4 fiber outages in routing that's affected a few different individuals like us who run nodes in that region. So this was in Amsterdam, but they had a route that was down between like London and Newark, and then that put a shitload of traffic on a different route.
Was that the outage that you had?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't an outage. It was just like really high latency. So anytime that we were proposing, like we were dropping a shitload of proposals, but it was very like intermittent. You could tell the route table was fucked. Like you could really tell. And so what ended up happening is that route was down. So it was bumping everything else from like Paris to Dulles or something. It was like their backup. And that's where Amsterdam runs. At least in nodes in the US.
Just because I don't actually know where the cables go. Yeah. Did you say Dulles because that is actually where it would be? Or did you say Dulles purely because it's a reference to the fact that they reroute the planes in Die Hard to Dulles?
A lot of that was two, right?
So in Die Hard 2, yeah, they reroute to Dulles, don't they?
There was two, yeah. Right? Yeah, because they take over the church like outside the runway off of it. Yeah. From what I see, a lot of times that when you have this routing, they still use airport codes. Not everywhere, but like in some vendors, they typically use airport codes to be able to use that as a city. Yeah, they use AMS and they use like IAD and they use EWR and they'll use stuff like that instead of like just typing it out.
Yeah,
which is fine. But but then they had another cut like in I don't think in Ireland or something, and there's another one after that, and there's another one. And so we were joking that maybe that was just to get them in the channel so we can complain about fiber cuts. But I don't think that was the.
They took it very literally, and that's why they're in their channel.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't like that shit. It's kind of annoying.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I think there's even less. there's even less of a sense in which at the moment, one of my takeaways from conferences was there's the sense in which the decentralization stuff is now like fully performative and nobody's even pretending, right? Mm-hmm. At conference, behind the scenes, as soon as you strike up any conversation with anybody, whatever decentralization does mean, it is purely lip service at this point. And I think, you know, if that's in a semi-open space, you know, if there's juice to be squeezed, it's not surprising, is it? Particularly. So what's the other fun stuff? What have we been up to over this time? There's been a few testnets and things this summer, haven't there?
There's been a lot.
There's been a few. We've been back on the testnet grind a little bit, but I imagine we're probably doing fewer than you guys because you're still fully on it. We've updated our marketing materials to say that we're selective, which is, you know what that's a reference to.
We're selective too.
It's a direct reference. It's very intentional. Nobody's yet picked up on it. So
we're selective. We are quite selective. We're very selective.
We're just incredibly selective. That's why we don't sometimes take these incredibly potentially lucrative business opportunities that come our way, because we're being more selective than our competitors. What have you guys been up to?
Let's see. Go ahead, Schulte.
We're doing SOC 2 training or certification. That's not fun. Let me tell you that right now.
SOC 2 or ISO?
SOC 2.
SOC 2.
Mostly because it's easier. And it does mostly the same thing.
It is mostly the same thing. Yeah. No, yeah. We're doing our ISO too.
You're doing
we're
ISO?
In the middle of that. Goddamn. Yeah. 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 So we're, I don't know, I would say 50% maybe. Which I mean, I don't know for you, but it hasn't been that challenging. I don't think, like, in the policy perspective and controls and things like that.
Yeah.
A lot of that shit that we had and those types of things. So it's not too bad. The obviously the big challenge with the stuff is always like is producing artifacts. But so I'm writing a lot of Ansible for that, and we've done some other things related to just kind of reworking some stuff with. Like, just shit that I want to do, honestly, like stuff that to me doesn't really mean that much, but like we're using Wazaa to be able to do some stuff related to like CVE identification and shit like that. And just some stuff like that, which has been, I think, more of a hassle than real benefit to us. But away from that, like from the other side of it, like, it's been nice to be forced to write some components that allow us to validate of what we say is true is true. And that's really kind of the whole point of that process. Right. So from that perspective, it's been good. And a lot of, thankfully we had a lot of the, I'm sure you guys do too, but like with obviously with automation and with overlay networks and with all these other types of things that we've been building for those years, to be able to get to this next level of saying X, Y, or Z associated to those policies and what we want to do is actually pretty easy. So that part's really good. And just being, you know, it's just all these little things that we've done over these last couple of years that have now started to add up into actually a pretty decent ISO certification. So I don't like, I mean, we'll have to do it. We haven't done our internal yet. So we'll have to do internal, like maybe in Q4, maybe. I'm hoping to do it maybe in October, and then we'll probably go for certification maybe in Q1, I think is probably what we do. I'm not really that much of a hurry, actually. Once the ISMS gets built, really, that's the lift. And then we're using a cloud-based tool to actually put everything into, we could talk about that too. I'm curious on what you picked. We haven't talked about it, right? Cause we didn't really talk about tool sets or anything like that stuff.
No, we didn't talk about it.
So I have that, which we haven't done too much in yet, other than like I'm pushing data there a little bit, but it's not that much. So I'm hoping that, like, I think it's a good milestone. It's not necessarily a differentiator, but it is for our size, I think. And honestly, ISO and SOC 2 and things like that, the smaller you are, the easier it is. It's really when you start getting into, you start having 5 or 6, 8 employees, 10 employees, 100 employees, that's when it becomes a real fucking pain in the ass.
With just the three of us, it's really annoying, like, to see that, we need to put 2-factor authentication on for whatever app. Yeah. All right, guys, I'll send out the notification. And then 3 days later, they get around to it, which is right. totally fine and reasonable for them. But right. it's still like, suddenly I'm halted by this thing. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then having to do that ultimately like over 20 or 30 different things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. If you need quite a low footprint of things in order to make it somewhat easy. And I worked for a startup once when we went through that process, and it was really, really interesting because all the things I thought would happen as part of that process kind of didn't really, because we'd moved away from a previous automation strategy into essentially a different like networking architecture. And, you know, everything was kind of like recoverable, like via the AWS console and stuff like that. There were ways of redeploying everything, but because of how things had moved with our clients and yada, 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 it was actually like, how would I describe what I'm trying to say? I guess like the system itself, like, or the way the estate, right, the technology estate of the company was set up was in incredible flux, right? And so a lot of, it was interesting to go through the process of getting the ISO, which we did get, and sort of had, you know, a growing engineering team at the time and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, the actual kind of like what I would have called like, you know, the red tape and whatnot around it was like way smaller on probably average than some of the growing pains companies that I'd been in that were having to start to do compliance stuff because their investors had told them to, or blah, 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 or an external auditor. It was really, really interesting because there's some stuff where I was like, surely we can't be compliant because of XYZ that you kind of know about as a developer or an engineer, or like there's something, you know, where like, we don't really track this, but it's all about, like you say, it's kind of about the artifacts and the way you express it. So, you know, not to put people off who might be potential clients that are, you know, looking at ISO and SOC certified organizations, because, you know, we in this podcast take such things very, very seriously. But it is one of those things where you're like, there's also a process to it. If you know the process, there's a way of there's a way of putting that together, I think, was my kind of takeaway from that, is like the people who were kind of hand holding us through it really knew how to be like, oh, they don't have a good answer for this.
Here's how you should approach that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the funny thing about these types of, I mean, I did this at a previous business that we did in, I don't even know what the hell year it was, maybe 5-6 years ago. And then we started the process even before that. We started one back in 2016. And like, it's obviously evolved a lot. Early on, like even like, I mean, 15 years ago or 10 years ago, it was much more challenging because everything was much more manual. And now, the one thing about these tool sets and like this whole process is like, just because somebody's ISO certified or SOC 2, it actually doesn't mean they're secure. It just means you have the processes in place to identify where there's issues, and you have the processes in place to solve those issues, and you have the proof that that all these things kind of come together to be able to have a continuous improvement. Could you have an open SSH port somewhere and it's admin? You totally could and still be SOC 2 compliant. The question is like, over time, do you have a process in place to identify that? Did that identification turn into something that was an actionable item? Did somebody assign to that actionable item? Did somebody complete that action item? Did somebody test that? Blah, blah, blah. And that's what's a funny thing about that. And like, a lot of people don't understand what these certifications are. It's not really like a, hey, you're secure as shit. It's really the process work of it. My point was like 10 years ago, that was a fucking nightmare because everything was in Excel. You had really no tools available to really manage these types of things. You had nothing automated to do that. And now with these, like, there's so much work on these platform tools to actually go out to cloud vendors, or we have one that takes an API so we can send like Ansible JSON, you know, formatted JSON to it for proof on certain things and that type of stuff, that really takes a lot of the burden off. Cause that's really what I was worried about, was like this whole fucking, you know, like I don't want to spend more time on proving the work than doing the work, which is always one of those concerns. But at least now, like there's a lot of work here, because I think a lot of these vendors realized how painful that process was and everything else associated to it. So
yeah, I agree. The tools that they use nowadays, where you can just plug in like your bare metal providers to prove that they're SOC 2 certified already, so therefore you don't need to like cover their ass with your documents, whatever, is really nice. I began the process in a previous company of SOC 2 certification, but I ended up leaving before they actually got it. And man, it was really cumbersome. I think that was 2018, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kind of dreaded having to go through myself. But with the toolings that are available nowadays, it's one, I'll say it's much nicer, but two, it makes it, I don't want to say more fun to complete it, but it almost makes it more difficult to have messed up machines by using these tools or mess up processes, because they prove it. And then you're like, oh yeah, okay.
Right.
I can resolve this. And then going forward, I now know like how to look into it in the future. And I think that's a big part of it. It's just like that you've gone ahead and reviewed everything gives you perspective on how it should be handled in the future. It's kind of like studying for a test, right? Studying for a test is like in creating a note card. Creating the note card doesn't probably actually do anything for you. You're probably not going to reference it. But in creating the note card, you then have, you know, committed more to memory and the correct way to do things.
Yeah, for sure. So, so that's a big thing, right?
I mean, you've
it's a lot of work there.
You've done a good job of selling me the idea of SOC 2 there, Schultz.
I don't know.
So the thing that I was joking about doing, which is a lot less useful, is I was joking about going for B-Corp certification.
It's also cheaper than it used to be. It was $50,000 in like 2018 at a pretty early point. It's much cheaper now, including the audit.
Yeah.
They still fucking take their
still quite a lot of money. I mean, for us, I think at the moment we probably don't, like, just financially, I don't think it adds up unless a client was like, yo, you need SOC 2.
I've had one conversation in the last year that has requested it.
Really?
Maybe two. Or at least asked about it. Usually I'm bringing that up, right? Like that we are headed down this path and this is something that we bring. I am expecting, like, we can get into regulation and everything else. I am expecting that change. Like, I do think that, like, as like it is a leading indicator that in that, like, we're going to get more requests related to that. And I think as the assets increase and as a visibility increase and blah, 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 like, it's going to turn into something, which is totally fine. I'm okay with that. Cause I think we run a good ship. So I like for that to happen. Cause I actually think that's a benefit to us, but up until today, in terms of August, 2025, it very rarely comes up.
I think it's
even with like a capital managers and things like that, like it's not that big of a concern. They're more concerned about there's good technical questions and things like that, but it's not so much around certification.
I mean,
I'd also add that there have been a couple people that we've chatted with that had their own like security questionnaire in order to
work with
you. So like they didn't care about whether you're certified. They have their own like questionnaire they have to work through.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah,
I think it makes total sense, but it's quite interesting as well.
By the way, can we talk about how fucking AI is about those? We use Claude a lot, right? I use Claude like for Anthropic. So you can build like projects and shit like that, small, nice little project, all of our like website information, all other security things that we've answered in the past, our ISO docs in there, like all this shit, like just in this giant like repo of shit. And so like I fill out those questionnaires all the time. And so now I'm using like those tools to like do a first cut at those. Holy fuck, are those things awesome? Like it's
that's smart,
dude.
That's
pulling really it's pulling shit out of the woodwork. I was like, oh yeah, I didn't even think about that. And like just bam bam bam, like it's been really really good. And like it comes off a little AI, so I basically like rewrite all that shit, but still, like, it's that has been also a huge change for us over the summer break, which has been like trying to use those tools one more just to pull all this data together and actually build like reasonable answers to some of these types of things. It's been pretty awesome. Should totally do that.
That's a really good idea.
Writing on your own is like miserable. And then I like ISO docs, website information, other proposals that we've written, MSAs, NDAs, GitHub, like a repo, just pulling that stuff together, because the context window, like for a specific question, there might be 50 different things that come together to build it, that, you know, a smart answer to those questions. And that's been really good. And it's not so much like it's not so much like it's a it's not a cheat. Like, it's just that, like, trying to answer that as an individual, you just forget about these other kind of components of that. And that's a really good use for those tools where it actually brings all that context.
Well, there were like a lot of times what people are really looking for. And again, like startups, if you're trying to sell into a big company, the reason they want to talk to your compliance person is because they're trying to find out how big your team is. Like, it's a lot of it is just smoke and mirrors for them asking the question, are you going to be around in 2 years? Mm-hmm. Are you going to be able to service this contract? Will it hang together?
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're a smaller player in any of these markets, you have this kind of instant penalization for being a smaller player, where just the overhead of coming up with the correct answers or whatever. So, I mean, yeah, sure. It's a really good use of the technology. And, you know, the thing I always used to find quite funny, because I've been on both sides of that, where tendering on the perspective of a large retailer in the UK, but also trying to get those kind of people to pay us right on different companies, different times. Mm-hmm. And I always used to find the whole thing like a little bit bizarre, right? Because the answer to a lot of the concerns of like, oh, well, if we make you a business critical part of XYZ and you know, we want to know you're going to be around, it's kind of like, well, write the fucking agreement properly, pay us properly, and it will fucking happen, right? Like, this is really straightforward stuff, right? Because if it's just like, you know, if it's a, you know, like a pure B2B play and they have 10,000 clients, they have 100,000 clients, whatever, it's like Salesforce or something. It's like, well, yeah, they're going to be around. Their pricing model is very different, yada, yada, yada. And you know, I've worked for companies that were trying to do volume, right? And you're kind of like, yeah, okay, that's actually a reasonable concern. If you have a company of like 20 employees that are trying to do the volume play, the 20 employees isn't very much, and they're burning through capital, they're burning through money on salaries, blah blah blah. You know, I can kind of see that. But if you have like some of the outfits I work for, where it's a lean shop, it's between 2 and 5 permanent employees plus contractors, like, you know, similar kind of setup that all of us are running, right? You're like, that shit is so fucking lean that they can run for a year on no profit if they need to, right? We're not going anywhere as long as you pay us. Like, it's very, very straightforward. And you know what's funnily enough, actually, in a shop of that size, we did work for like the British government, Scottish government or whatever, because it turns out once you fill in that form once, right? And one of the CEOs of the company was very sensible about how they managed not repeating work. They basically managed to do it once and then get away with not having to do it for a couple more years, but doing work for multiple departments of government. And that was like huge for that company, as I understand it. I might have simplified that or slightly misunderstood it. So apologies to those guys if they ever watch this and they go, that's not what we did. But you, to be clear to them, if they ever do watch this, it seemed like you did a really good job of punching above your weight. That's what I'm trying to say. Good job. I wish I was as smart as you guys. But like anything, like now it kind of seems like, I'm not saying that what you've done isn't smart, but like, you don't have to plan several steps ahead other than making sure you collect that documentation and then use the tools to then synthesize it. Something that has your past, the institutional knowledge of your company, right? Is basically which is really powerful.
Yeah. It's been good, I have to say. Rama's here. He says the goodbye episode. Number one, it's not the goodbye episode. It's just, we're just off summer break. Episode. That's all. Yeah. Without the Aussie. Null can't be here today, although he is calling me right now. Let me conference him in real quick.
Bloody hell. I'm sweating here.
All right, that's it.
Lovely stuff. That's great. Yeah, so the real reason Null's not here is because childcare responsibilities overlap with filming time. We haven't quite managed to figure it out yet. And crucially, as we were talking about just before the show, we decided to come back off summer break just in time for me to have my second child. And we had on the podcast before where I was totally exhausted every time we did this.
I swear to God, somewhere in these transcripts, I said that kids ruin everything. Somewhere in these transcripts, I said. And it's proven itself here on Game of Notes.
Bullish indicator.
Everybody's nodding positively. Schulte's like, hell yeah.
We still get woken up every hour, every single night.
Oh, and Schulte was at my house. That's also happened over the summer break. How about that?
That was fun. I'm sad you didn't get to meet the Mr. Baby.
I know. Us too.
Little baby monad testnet 2. little baby Aptos Sui.
Yeah, that's right.
I was trying to tell somebody that. You didn't think about Do Kwon naming his child Luna. I was telling somebody about that.
It came up
independently of that. It's happened a couple of times recently. And it was somebody outside of crypto, and they would like talking about, oh yeah, there was that big crash or something. I was like, oh, that was in the Cosmos ecosystem. I was kind of around for that. And they're like, yeah. That guy was crazy. And I was like, yeah, he named his child after the token. And they were like, no, he didn't. That's too crazy. The crash, everything, believe that. That's too crazy. I was like, no, literally named the child Luna. I had to look it up and show it my phone.
Luna's a nice name.
It's plausibly a real name.
It wasn't like, yeah. It wasn't like Schultze named his son Cerberus or something, right? Like it's
we all have lights.
Cerberus. Thank you.
Is it Cerberus?
Yeah. Latin, hard C, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Look, we all had high hopes for the little doggy, but it just, the little papa wasn't going to make it.
Unfortunately. My son, Odin. Yeah.
To be fair, that's quite a good name. That's quite a good name.
Odin's not bad.
The guy from Sigur Rós, the singer, is called Thor, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, and there's Half-Thor, the strongest man in the world.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. The mountain from Game of Nodes, or not Game of Nodes, Game of Thrones.
Game of Nodes. Life imitating ass, imitating dog shit, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Shit, we must have seen loads of good films over the summer as well. That's probably something that happened.
I went to go see F1. Did you watch that?
F1 the movie. Was it good?
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's Top Gun on the road. Basically what it is, right? A little bit.
Dig it.
Top Gun 2 on the road.
Top Gun 2. So not quite as good as Top Gun 1. It was okay.
No, it's different.
Hey, so you know what?
We went to go see it in the IMAX, right? So actually what they did is I missed the first running, and then they re-ran it back in the original, like in the large IMAX for like, I don't know, a weekend or something like that. So it was like a month out, and I was like, I'm just going to buy this and then drag my kids to it. Which they were totally not thrilled about it. But anyway, I thought, it is what it is, right? It's that the old guy teaches the young guy, and like, can he do it? Can he not do it? And he gives him, but he still has the ability to sacrifice his own success for the young one, and blah blah blah. But in the end, like, it's, you know, whatever.
Oh man,
it's fine.
Classic story.
Okay, right? But here's the thing: I was on a work thing a little while ago, and there was a Canadian guy there. And people were talking about niche films, and I just took a punt because he was Canadian. And I went, have you ever seen the hockey film about the small hockey team where, and he was like, Slapshot. And I was like, I knew you would know the name of that film. And
that's not a Canadian movie.
No, it's not. But like, it's got hockey in it. He was like, fucking Slapshot.
They're like Kansas City or something, right? Yeah, I forget where the hell they are. Right? Kansas City.
But I was like, I didn't want to say the name of the film until I was like, because if I was going to miss with it, I was just like, oh yeah, I can't remember the name of it anyway. I'll just like style it out.
He just
like came in, and I was like, bam.
I thought he was going to say that too.
I was like, shit, dude, we can talk about Slapshot now for a while. He's like, oh, the bit with the national anthem. I was like, yeah, I guess. Everybody else at the table was like, what is fucking wrong with these people? And I was like, okay, guys. Oh, and I couldn't go to it because of childcare responsibility. But there was in London when I was walking past independent cinema. There was a Aussie cult movies night advertised, and it had Chopper, Wake in Fright, and what's the other one that Noel recommended that we watched? It was one of those, basically. And I was just like, dude, this is Game of Nodes, the movie night.
Chopper?
Yeah, I think so.
Which one's that? Which one is that?
It's the guy with the, you know, the mustache.
Oh, yeah. How is Wake in Fright? That's so weird that movie's like, is that considered like an Australian classic or something? Does it come up in that way?
It's a classic of Australian new wave cinema.
Is it?
It's also a very important film for the LGBT community, I gather, because it like, and I know like you watch that as a non-Australian, and you're like, it seems like just a lot of toxic masculinity. And it's like, apparently like even the level to which that film has any kind of homoeroticism or whatever that is in any way acknowledged is a big improvement on where they were before that film was made. So there you go.
Does it?
Yeah, apparently that film is sensitive by Australian standards.
Really?
Of the time. I mean, it was made in like what? Like
70s.
I don't remember any. I don't remember anything like about that in that movie.
I think the.
I have to go back and watch it again.
Actually, was there? I mean, there's always home erotism.
I don't know if I want to watch it again.
I've watched it twice, possibly three times. I don't know.
I've watched it many times, but yeah.
It's a good film. The kangaroo section as well. Oh my god! I couldn't make that anymore.
So fucked up. It's so fucked up.
It's good. Shit, I'm sure I've seen some really good films this summer, but now I can't recall off the top of my head.
That's only when I watched in the theater. I haven't been to theater. That was the first time I think we were in the theater for a year. Like, it feels like it's been forever, but I mean, other movies, we watch a bunch of shit, but I just watched Smoking the Bandit last night. Does that count?
I mean, what, the original?
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
then I Googled what the fuck a Diablo sandwich was for like a half an hour. I was like, that's a sandwich that Jackie Gleason orders in the restaurant. He orders a Diablo sandwich.
What is it?
Which I didn't know what the hell it was. It's totally made up, which I realized it was made up for that movie. Oh. And then there's a bunch of YouTubers are out there trying to figure out what the hell that is, which I guess is a spicy pulled pork sandwich. And I was like, oh, okay. So then I was like, I'm going to have to do it.
Get one.
Yeah, we're going to have to give it a shot. Make a Diablo. Yeah, exactly.
I took Artifact was in London a while ago for a conference. I took him to, first, a cockfighting pit, a former cockfighting pit. Obviously, we don't still have cockfighting in the UK in a pub, but we went to a former cockfighting pit.
Good backpedal, by the way. It was former cockfighting pit in
the city of London. And then
dogfighting now.
Of course, it's dogs now. Like, we're not savages. And then we went for a sandwich, like right towards the end of the night. That was so good that, like, I think it was like, I feel like a couple of months later, either I saw Artifact again in person or he texted me and just said, I'm still thinking about that sandwich. And I was like, yeah, that's what we get. You know, when you show somebody around like a city you know well and you're like, I need one, just like if I do one thing where it's just like, hey, yeah,
let's go.
That's
here.
What you're going for, isn't exactly. it? That's the whole purpose of you showing somebody around. Yeah. So I was like, sandwich, right. I'll take it. Call it the Diablo sandwich. That's the one.
Yeah.
That's the Brick Lane Bagel, for those of you who are actually based in London and would know what that is. Brick Lane Bagel, I believe 1 a.m., something like that.
Are they bagel sandwiches?
Yeah, it's like a bagel. Just there's bagels all day, baby.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've done for like... Oh, fuck it, forever. Somebody have to tell me how long Brick Lane Bagels has been open there. I strongly imagine that if I asked my old man about it, he'd tell me that he was having Brick Lane Bagels there in 1979 when he lived in the area. So
sounds Brick healthy.
Lane Bagels.
It's just
it sounds
just
healthy.
Big old 2 a.m.
shawarma. What is that? Doesn't sound like a 2 a.m. shawarma type of thing, right? It sounds healthy.
Oh, it's like salt, marinated salt beef or whatever, just like a big chunk of salt beef.
Oh, okay.
And a big pickle, like you know, one of those huge pickles, just sliced clean in two.
Yeah.
In a bagel.
Right on top.
Yeah. I don't get to go there very often. Okay. And so I just ate two when I just had two.
You did?
Yeah. And then Artifact was like, damn, I see why you had two, because you do think about it afterwards if you don't get your fill.
Get one.
I was like, yeah.
Right.
What you gonna do?
Can't go home hungry.
ECC.
Whoa, those are weird.
Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? It's ECC was a weird vibe this year as well. Like that was another one where everywhere you went, as soon as people were like, we're doing a little chat, as soon as anybody found out that you ran a validator shop, they were like full sales mode, and you're like, bruh, especially in Ethereum, do you think validators are bringing home the big bucks at the moment? Like, what is this? It was very, very interesting. Like, it was like, it was like liquidity crunch. The conference was my vibe.
Really?
Well, there are, I mean, I think it's mostly the Cosmos ecosystem that's poor at this point, right? Like, hyperliquid validators are just raking it in. Sui validators are raking in. Solana validators kind of, but not totally raking it in. We just happen to be poor.
Yeah. Okay. Fair point. But as in, like, a lot of there are Ethereum L2s doing well. Like you say, Hyperliquid, that was the follow-up question, right? Whenever anybody was like, you're like, we do some stuff in the Ethereum ecosystem, and they're like, do you do Hyperliquid? We're a bare metal provider. Do you do Hyperliquid? I want to sell you some stuff. And you're like, we don't do Hyperliquid. And they're like, glaze over. I'm not going to give you the cool merch. No. Wasn't it? Didn't the last thing I needed was to carry any more shit around France. But yeah, I managed to gelato every day though. So, you know, it was swings and roundabouts, as they say, right?
Ups and downs.
Ups and downs. Like, Cannes is an interesting place to do it, right? Because, I was like, all these clueless, crypto guys can get completely owned. Cause like a lot of the France is kind of the capital of attacks, like physical attacks on people who have crypto assets and stuff. There's been quite a lot of documented cases.
Is it really?
Yeah. As far as I can tell, there's a lot of documented cases of like kidnappings and all sorts of stuff. Cause there's like, it's like organized crime and stuff, like, you know, on the continental mainland or whatever. And so I was like,
wait, hold on. We need to delve deeper into this. Really? Francis?
If you go into any of the public repositories, like there's one for Bitcoin, for example, which document, like on GitHub document, like, in the news, like physical attacks, of people to try and steal or extort crypto assets. France from a kind of non-scientific, I was just flicking through to get some like very rough numbers. France seems overrepresented, was my takeaway. Admittedly, almost all Paris, as far as I could tell. Like, again, just from like flicking through data in a non-scientific way. And so I was kind of like, Cannes, is that going to be okay? But it turns out, like, because Cannes, there's so many, like, Cannes is such a weird place, right? The menus are in English, French, and Russian.
Really?
Yeah, some of those menus are in Russian. You're like, yes, a country with the economy the size of Italy, known for not being under an embargo at the moment. Oh, wait. So why are some of the menus in Russian unless they're... Anyway, so, but yeah, there's a lot of rich people in Cannes, and they have their own basically local police and additional bylaws and blah, blah, blah. It's actually like, it's incredibly closely surveilled. So, you know, the cruelest crypto blowers just like walking around with their lanyards flapping. We're actually completely safe. Unlike, you know, whenever it was like a few years ago in Lisbon, where we heard of loads of people like getting into potential trouble and stuff.
Right. Lisbon. Yeah. Sorry. And then in Barcelona, where you get your own pocket pick.
All right. Thanks. Yeah. Keep reminding me. It's like, yeah, but that was non-targeted. That was just, I got done over by a kid who shoved past me on a tram, and I was just like, that kid. I was like, well, fucking second. Should have known better. Yeah. You know what? Backpacked all the way through the third world, and I got done by that trick. I'm still angry about it. It's the oldest trick in the book.
Yep. It really is.
Yeah. I think that's literally, what your business partner said to me after it happened. I went, wait a second. That's like, my wallet. He was like,
he's like, really?
Really? Yeah, it was that guy that just got off the thing. That's the oldest trick in the book.
The guy that bumped.
Do you think I don't know that?
There's four of us on this metro train, and then this kid bumps into the fray. There's like, literally, there's no reason to bump into anybody. There's nobody on this train.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Like, just that, kind of, oh, shit, busy. There was nobody on it. It was like the three of us.
Yeah, I was really surprised. It's like, fucking, yeah. Like, watch where you're going.
You're like, okay. You're like, are you okay, sir?
Oh, yeah. I got completely rolled by that. That was...
You did.
But as your business partner said, you know, cheap lesson. Completely cheap lesson. Changed the way I do personal operational security when I'm not doing part of a daily routine. In fact, even when I'm just traveling on the train domestically in the UK and stuff now, I now am back to full paranoid third world backpacker mode. Like,
what, you stick your phone in there? In the backpack?
No, down my pants, obviously.
Oh, okay.
Come on now, bro. Really
loose fitting pants with a giant pocket that opens.
No, yeah. But just like, you know, if you're like, just like sitting down, you've got your laptop in your bag or whatever at your feet, have like a big carabiner on your bag and just like clip it around like the base of the chair and stuff. If somebody just like walks past and scoops, you know, it would just go clunk. And can't do anything, which is shit that I would never have done on a train like 5 years ago or 3 years ago, because I'd just be like, that is too paranoid, and now I'm back fully on that. hey, what you gonna do? Cheap lesson.
Well, I think the other thing was like you were worried about two-factor because they get two-factor app on there and a bunch of other shit that was like, oh, fuck, how the fuck am I going to get that back? That's the other piece, too, is like, how do you – because I export like our two-factor out because that thing's not cloud-based. It's just it's one-off type of thing. And like that thing gets exported all the time because I always get worried about that, too, if I lose a phone.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not gonna get pickpocketed, but
I actually have just to have essentially a smartphone with our two-factor app recovered, pre-recovered. And yeah. all that is on that smartphone is the two-factor app.
Is that
it's app? just in our vault because I'm just like, well, look, absolute worst case scenario, I literally cannot get in. Everything is fucked. It is yeah. only ever a case of getting a flight, getting a taxi, picking that thing up, plugging it into charge and just being like,
okay. Did you say getting a flight?
Well, because I'd have to come back to the bank vault to get it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, wherever you are. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
let's assume I'm in Barcelona or whatever. I had to pay the idiot tax, right?
Yeah.
That's also what your business partner called it.
You did. Yeah.
I learned a lot of things that day. It's just that sometimes you learn too much. You see too much in too short a space of time. That's the.
You were like. I remember your face. You were like, what happened? I don't
understand. So annoying.
How did this happen?
It was kind of like, it's funny in hindsight, but also the fact that we were actually out drinking and then I mainly had to deal with it in the morning with a hangover. That was the worst part. Because you were like, you have to call up, you have to like cancel cards, freeze things.
Like, you're not doing that.
Yeah. And they're just like, are you okay, sir? You're like, you sound agitated, but this is normal if you've had a theft incident. And you're like, yes, I'm agitated because of the theft. And you're like, I'm just really hungover and I have a headache and I don't want to be here.
Slurring your words.
Yeah, it was also hot in that flat. Well, maybe it was just
I think it was just your rage.
just my rage heating the flat. Forget Schulze's rack. It was actually quite 500 watts of rage.
Yep. That was a good time.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty good. I enjoyed it. Like that was the last I think foreign conference that I did before ECC actually.
So. Yeah. No, SmartCon, Barcelona. October. It was 23 now, right? Something 2 years ago.
Yeah. It was just after I started the PhD. So yeah, it must have been 2 years.
Yeah. Are you almost done with that? Are we done with that?
I'm on such
are we rounding third base here? Where are we?
I'm on such a delay. Well, I do it part time, right? So it can be up to 6 years, but usually it's 4 to 5. But I'm two in and I've been trying to get the thing that you have to do is your checkpoint organized for a while, but it's really hard to get it organized. And in the end, it got delayed and delayed and delayed. And then eventually an email got sent around by like the admin department of the university, bollocking everybody involved for not having organized it, including me, obviously. And then suddenly it got like arranged like that. Oh, and it's like in 2 weeks or whatever. So it's quite a big deal.
So what is that exactly?
So I have to do two things because they weren't done and they're kind of the same thing, but a bit different. I have to do what's called a first year viva, which is to defend that I haven't been slacking for my first year, which is kind of, it's not no work, but it's like a little bit of a formality if you haven't actually been slacking. And then the second thing I have to do is an upgrade viva, which is to actually prove that you have fulfilled enough of the requirements of being a PhD student and actually can viably get to actually receiving the PhD in order to continue. And some people do fail that.
Does that mean you have to stage a Juno upgrade blindfolded or something like that? Like what's the actual,
I have to write a long paper about the theoretical implementation of a Juno upgrade blindfolded. Yeah. I mean, I'm actually slightly kidding about that. That's kind of what it is. Like,
did you see there's a Prop 16 Twitter account?
Is that,
what is that?
Yeah, there's a swap. We should have created that. Why the fuck did we not do that?
Because what does it tweet?
Because I usually tweet out about the anniversary because it's in my calendar. Prop 16 is in my calendar, and then Jack tweeted out and it's like some never forget Prop 16, and then I was like, yeah, never forget it. And then there's a Prop 16 Twitter account was like never forget, and like the Prop 16 Twitter account. The subtitle is never forget. I was like, I thought it was one of you two or one of you three, actually.
Could be. It sounds like it could be a Jack thing.
It's not me.
Is Strange Love still going or did Jack exit? What's going on there?
They were purchased.
Yep, they were acquired. Yeah. So no, I guess they wouldn't be considered still going because they got rolled into Ondo Finance.
Ondo.
Yeah, they're in Ondo. The whole team is in Ondo. Whether Strangelove still exists, I don't know. It might have some. Depends on what the entity happened. If they bought the entity or the assets.
By sheer coincidence, I was wearing my Strangelove t-shirt from Cosmoverse 2021.
Were you?
Today.
Should frame that sucker.
Yeah, it's glow in the dark. It's actually quite cool. Like, I didn't realize. I was literally, because of like eco-saving, or I think actually because the building landlords are cheap where we have our offices, the lights in the toilets turn off after 3 minutes, right? That is too short. If you were taking
it's way
a dump.
Too short. It's ridiculous.
So what happened was the lights went out and my fucking t-shirt was glowing. And that's how I found out it glowed because I was trying to take a dump and it just said, Strangelove. I was like, this is kind of, there's a metaphor in here about my life, but I can't put it together. But I deserve this or this is appropriate or something like that. It was my kind of vibe there.
They build good tools, right? So even
great tooling,
physical as well as digital. Yeah. So they're part of Ondo now, and then ICL has been picking up some stuff there. I think ICL is taking over Horcrux, right?
Yep. I'll speak of ICL. I saw a friend of the podcast. I saw Mags at ECC.
Did?
Yeah, I will say, obviously a few months delayed, given that ECC was like fucking 3 months ago, 2 months ago. The Cosmos party was pretty good. Like a lot of the, some of the ECC events were a total downer, man. Like there were just loads of people just like, oh my God, the end times, oh my God. And the Cosmos party was like gently positive, sat around with a few people, caught up with Erteman from L5.
Gently positive is like that should be the Cosmos subtitle.
Gently positive. Like had a good chat with Max and just like.
Gently positive.
Yeah. Got a little bit of, miscellaneous merch, and then
that's cool.
Yeah, just said hello to
yep. People. They've been busy.
It seems they're doing stuff. Although, like, I was kind of like, I came off of that event feeling like very, very positive, and then like, you know, obviously saw all of the like all the WASM and COS and WASM and blah 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 stuff afterward, and was a bit like, this is like maybe I missed this in the event, but like this feels like another direction change, but.
Oh yeah, for sure. Is permissionless CosmWASM live yet on the hub or no? Not yet.
No, I think it was only permissioned and now it's going away.
No, it's going to permissionless.
Oh, it's going to permission. Well, I thought it was, but then I thought there was some other thing, right?
No, I don't think I don't think it was ever permissioned at all on there. I thought it was nothing and then they were going permissionless.
Well, maybe you're thinking of the EVM. They're going to add EVM for a while and I think they cut that.
That went away. Yeah. Yeah, that process was dumped.
Well, right? Wasn't there a thing where they were going to go EVM instead of CosmWASM? Now are we back on CosmWASM?
Permissionless CosmWASM.
Okay, so we've had another U-turn since the last U-turn.
Yes. Yeah. So, because I think if I remember correctly, Mags was on stage at ECC talking about EVM and the Cosmos. Right? Was it there at ECC or somewhere else that like they did a big presentation related to EVM on the Cosmos?
Yeah, so they were at ECC saying they were going to migrate from WASM to EVM, and it was a sovereign EVM day. That was the day at the ECC, and I was like, fine, like I prefer COS and WASM, but I can see this, like this kind of makes sense, gently positive.
Yeah, I could see it.
You know, but then we've had another U-turn since then. That's the order.
Right. And then that went away. And then I think they let governance decide the CosmWASM structure, and governance dictated that it passed related to permissionless. I think I know it's enabled on provider. I know that on the testnet, but I just don't know if it went live on mainnet. I don't think so though, but I know it's coming. So here we are. Yeah.
I mean, CosmWASM pretty good. We should relaunch HAL. Just like spaffed so, out the hub.
But I don't know. What I don't know is the ownership of CosmWASM, because I know Confio, I know Simon and team basically lost that contract with the ICF to deliver that, right? When they went to the EVM thing. And then Neutron holds it or something. I don't even know. Like Neutron's involved in some way.
What?
Yeah, so I got really? An email saying I think Confio moved off of CosmWASM. Possibly Confio have even wound up. I don't even know if they're still a going concern.
No, they're still around. Going? Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. And then, but then, yes. Yeah, so what I don't know is I don't understand the ownership of CosmWasm today. I don't think that's ICF or ICL. I don't think so. And then, so anyway, so now we're back to this permissionless type of thing. So permissionless, I don't know, permissionless on the hub seems weird to me, but I don't really know too much about what
we're going to have a lot of chain holds. That's what we're going to have.
We're gonna have a lot.
Take it from
one thing I know. One thing I know from Juno.
Take it from a guy that didn't have a holiday in 2.5 years. There are going to be a lot of chain holes.
There's going to be a lot of chain holes.
Yeah. I sometimes, like, it's so far in the past that I sometimes forget why I was so stressed in that period of my life, and now I remember that
some random fucking dude writing a contract that whatever the
usually
fuck,
accidentally
right?
they found fucked something thing. Up they broke the test that they've done whatever
yeah.
And yeah, it's one of those, like, I keep getting this sort of stuff now with the PhD things where people are like, how will you manage your stress, how can you deliver and I just like bro
manage your stress as a PhD student.
There's loads of because loads of stuff about what I'm having to do now is basically like I've done like quite a bit of research stuff and backing, and like I have like a thesis skeleton, all the shit that you need to do to like move forward with your research and stuff. Your submissions to conferences, like written papers, blah, 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 blah. But like you also have to like write reports and things for these vivas, like where you're sort of saying like, this is my strategy for how I manage stress and how I manage delivering things and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And, are you just like, bro, I'm a core maintainer of a blockchain. I can't even, like, this is definitely not unstressful, but like this is like.
You woke up at 10. Like, shut the fuck up. Fucking PhD students. Are you kidding me?
It's just like, yeah, we have deadlines. You know, fucking the deadline for this stuff is like, oh, sometimes something comes along and you got to get it done in like 8 days or 9 days. And you're like, yeah, sometimes page duty wakes me up at fucking 1 a.m.
Dude, I've had the string of the worst fucking pager duty at 4 a.m. every like three or four like every morning for like the last two nights, but every night before that for like 3 or 4 days. Stupidest fucking thing. Like one DYDX node just halts, just stops, and I'm woken up. Osmosis node reboots for some reason, and for some reason they're all down, so the endpoint's down. I get like, I'm like, what the fuck is this thing going? Like
my life in PagerDuty has become a lot more peaceful now we've just turned off the Cosmos nodes that were making us no money.
It was great for so long, and then like, this in the last week it's been,
I did get woken up by like a completely undiagnosable and random network choke on Aptos like a few weeks ago. And that was, I was so unhappy about that, because you know when you get woken up and it's just close enough to when you actually would wake up, your body just goes, yeah, hey, are we waking up early this morning? Okay, cool, I'll just flood your body with cortisol and you can wake up.
And then
you're just like, oh, I'm now just like in that kind of stressful early wake up where you're like, oh shit, I've woken up early because something's on fire, I've got to do something. And you're just like, oh, but it's actually still like nobody else in the house is awake. This is useless. And I don't really want to just start working now. That feels really shit. So you're just like, do I go read a book or something while I wait for everybody to wake up? Like, yeah.
Watch YouTube shorts for an hour and a half?
Do you know what? It's funny. I did actually just watch Tom Cardi YouTube shorts.
Dude, I could watch YouTube shorts for like 2 hours. I could sit there.
Do you remember back in the day there was that YouTube playlist called by a guy called Epic Donut Dude called the Instant Regret Playlist? That shit. I could watch even to this day, I could watch Instant Regret forever. It's just like the deepest, darkest, like subconscious liminal brain of the internet. That shit's wild. You know what? Apart from like grousing about a few different things, like, we haven't even talked about, like, you know, your country has completely changed its stance on crypto several times, right? In the last, things are moving, right? In the States now.
Since we started this podcast, you mean?
Well, as in like, you know, since we started the podcast, but even in the last few months, like, apart from the fact the world economy is like, you know, crashing.
Yeah.
Which is, it turns out, not good for crypto. So, you know, oops. But you know, things are moving in that direction. That's a big change over the summer.
Things are moving. Nobody's actually concerned that we're based on the US anymore, which is that part's positive, at least.
Yeah.
At least enough that. Yeah, that part's positive. I mean, this country has issues, but from a crypto perspective, I would say there's a lot less oversight and watchdogging related to things that either we do or some of the tool sets and products coming out of the US associated with that. Obviously from an ETF perspective and like just restaking and then from the SEC perspective, like all that, a lot of that shit is like gone away, right? Like at least from a open suits and things like that, obviously have disappeared. So, but I don't know. There's not necessarily clarity. I wouldn't say that, but at least there's less. I don't know. How would you describe it, Schulte? Like there's less.
There's less. I don't know. Important people oversight.
Law and order.
Yeah,
that might be the problem, right? Is that there's less law and order in crypto, but there's also less law and order in the entire country.
No, there's more law and order in the entire country. There's less law and order where. If there's law and order, it's not related to making money.
Yeah, I did see that National Guard thing in California. Oh,
there's more law and order away from making a dollar. If there's things to be made or markets to be grown or opportunity, those restrictions are decreasing. Away from that idea, those restrictions are increasing, right?
Yeah.
Immigration, this, that, like those, that's different. But related to the almighty dollar and the growth of the economy and the growth of GDP, if you want to say that, or growth of new markets or competition or those types of things, that is greatly decreasing. Is that fair? I don't know. I just made that up, but it kind of seems like that's a macro look at it.
Well, I mean, it also includes like, well, I don't want to get into politics. God.
Yeah, fair play. I wouldn't if I were you guys too. It's okay. I mean, if there's one thing I've learned about American politics is every time British people get complacent about American politics, we end up creating a bigger dumpster fire about 2 to 3 years after.
That's true.
So
you do.
Well, we're currently in the situation where I don't read the news, but people in the office were telling me that apparently there's just like loads of right wing, like fashy kind of youths just like putting Union Jacks everywhere, and then people are just like
sweet,
and people are just like, oh, it's just the Union Jack, it's probably harmless. And then when people actually like go, hey dude, why are you spray painting a Union Jack in this roundabout in the middle of nowhere just for reasons, is it just like for thing, then they get beaten up, and it's like, ah, this is like some fashy thing. It's like, just like, why, whatever. And you're just like, ah, this is the kind of shit that was happening in like the 30s in Germany. I don't like it. It's maybe time to.
That's how Brexit started, right?
Well, the thing is, like, Brexit was like the people who were kind of dumb enough to think that any good could come out of Brexit were the ones who are saying like, oh, well, at least it's like a pressure valve and it will calm the demands for this, that, and the other, and you know, an impulse towards authoritarianism. And it's like, well, no, because you need to actually address problems in your country and your economy, right? Otherwise, people continue to get angrier. And if real wages stay stagnant and if a wealth inequality keeps rising, then, you know, people are going to continue to get angrier. And the funny thing is, right, the people who supported Brexit the most, the people who are funding the far right in the UK, are overwhelmingly ex-bankers who literally don't even live in the UK. A lot of them are non-doms. They are the ultra wealthy who stand to benefit from the UK becoming like a massive tax haven, essentially. And fuck the consequences. And so there's this weird thing where they, you know, they benefit essentially from just continuing this cycle of anger and deprivation personally. Mm-hmm. And they're just hoping that the music will never stop. Like they'll never be lacking a chair when the music finally stops. They won't end up against the wall. And it's like, well, actually, like, I wouldn't make that bet. Look at the French Revolution. Look at Ceausescu. Look at the fall of communism. Like, when the music stops, quite often you do end up against the wall. It's just that a lot of people have to suffer and potentially die in the meantime. It's a very short-sighted strategy to get 5% extra of your money rather than paying 10% extra in tax or whatever. Like it's very, very dumb. And it never works in the long run, which is why it's just like, why, remind me why we're doing this again. Like, I thought we pretty conclusively tested this hypothesis last century. It turns out it was to do flashy things.
I think that idea of in the long run is dead.
Yeah.
Like everything here, at least here, is it's all extremely short term with very little, like, we'll deal with it when we deal with it. Now there's a balance there. Like, cause that strategy is not necessarily bad. Right. But that is that's kind of like, just move fast and break things and we'll figure it out and blah, blah, blah. Right. Like there's pieces of that are viable, because you go the other way, which is like you're basically paralysis by analysis, which is the opposite of that, which means like you're doing so much analysis related to a problem that you actually can't make a decision. And there's balances between those two. And right now it's definitely going the former, which is like, fuck it. Fucking, we're just going to drop things. We're not going to think through these problems. We're going, that's the whole Doge thing here in the US. Like, we'll just cut these people. Fuck it. We'll figure it out. If they need it, then if something breaks, we'll bring it back. Right. And I think that idea, that extends pretty far. And then the latest thing, which, not to get too political, but this idea, like, I don't like the numbers or I don't like the information, so I'm just going to fire whoever who's on the other end of that. And that's the solution to solving the problem, we're not going to use a third party source or trust anything that comes out. We're just going to, whoever doesn't say the party line is going to get termed. That's a fucking dangerous slope, though. That's bad news.
Yeah, that's pretty bad news, Baz, isn't it?
That's bad news. Yeah, that's bad news. Although I do think that doesn't necessarily have a long life. I honestly don't think that can go for very, very long. Like, eventually that shit catches up.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the numbers are, if the numbers are reality, you'll see that in other ways.
Well, eventually the other shoe's going to drop, right? Which is literally, like, for Bandcamp, right? I got an email to my Bandcamp account today saying, hey, by the way, if you're a Bandcamp subscriber and you're in the United States, you should be aware that lots of global shippers are now no longer shipping small merchandise items like t-shirts, CDs, vinyls, whatever. Actually, I think technically, depending which jurisdiction you're in, vinyls and CDs might actually be exempt under a certain US restriction, but the global shipping.
For what, tariffs?
I think global.
The de minimis thing.
Yeah, I think global shipping companies don't want to figure it out because it's too expensive to look at the parcel and figure out what it is. So they're just like, blanket. Sure. Like, no. But basically, it was just saying, hey, if you're based in the US, you should be aware that lots of shops are probably not committed to ship to you. And it might be because the shop doesn't want to deal with it. It might be because they can't find something to ship to you. We've enabled a feature to just toggle and basically say that you can sell everywhere in the world, but you can't sell to the US. You can just toggle that feature on in Bandcamp now. It's just saying, hey, if you're based in the US, you should know that perhaps not every artist will be aware of this or a store. So you should be aware that maybe you just shouldn't buy stuff. And you're like, okay, this is where we are. Like, maybe you shouldn't buy stuff on the internet because it might not ever arrive because the person might not be able to ship it to you. cool. But hey, you know, on the plus side, in the UK we finally have regulatory clarity around exchange traded notes, which means rank and file investors will have very easy access once implemented to essentially a pseudo asset which represents major cryptocurrencies. So
what does that mean?
It's just like everything else in Britain, it's a massive complicated fudge to get around the fact that you can't do a thing, but we'll find a way of doing the thing, but with more regulation. People want to hold crypto assets. Ordinary people get wrecked. So they've basically done the same thing as, like, essentially the accredited investor thing in the US, where you can hold crypto assets if you already hold them, or if you're an accredited investor or you're a business.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, other people, how do they hold them? It's like, well, exchange traded notes is like, it's the same as like an ETF essentially, or whatever, where you say, oh, I have exposure to this asset, but I don't actually hold the asset. It's held by an institution. Course, the institutions will then make, so, popular strategy.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure just in time for the PhD to be completed. all these timelines are to be fair, these timelines are aligning a little bit. Like, we talked about this, like, you going in this area and like going after stables and the idea of digital currencies as use, and like your timing is fucking right on, though, right? Because like whatever's going to happen here is going to be somewhat positive or negative. Either this is going to be perfect or a total fucking disaster within the next 4 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Can we agree on that?
So yeah, exactly.
You've completely wasted the last 5 years of your life, or you've made the smartest decision that you possibly could at the right time. You will figure that out by 2029.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, but I joke about it, but like nobody, it's very rare that you're put in that you can actually have a position to have this type of, not a coin flip, like it's not a coin flip, like it's not 50-50, like it's going the right way, but like, it's going the right way. How many times in life does that happen where like you have this massive cultural shift and you're building an expertise as being a thought leader in an area that just happened to arrive when you did? It's fucking crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, that's kind of like our whole thesis for all our businesses, right? Is that we...
I'm just trying to avoid going to an office. Well, that's really what it's about.
On some level, isn't it? Basically, like, we got into this, or at least I got into this, because I was in the right place at the right time. And then after that, you're just like, okay, you end up with a set of things that you know or you can do that other people don't have. That's competitive advantage. Sure. And then you just try and run with it. That's my understanding of how business works. This is possibly why I'm bad at business.
Well, it's a mix of doing very strategic things to at some point get lucky enough where luck goes your way.
Yeah,
because it is a mix of strategy and luck, right? Right, but
you have to, I think, on the whole, correct.
Right. Well, you also have to be prepared for good luck. Like that has to happen too, right?
Yeah.
Like meaning, like you thought about this. You're 2 years into this process. 2 years ago, when you brought this up, I think I guess we were supportive. I was going to say we weren't supportive, but we were supportive. Yeah. Like, if you're not going to do it now, like, when are you going to do it? Okay. Right? Like,
when you have young kids and everything's kind of fucked anyway, it's probably the time to do it. Because once you're back to killing it at work and in life in general, you can be like, why would I abandon that to?
Well, you're at a point where you're like, you're all in. Yeah. Like, what? Like, what else? Like, not that you have nothing else to lose. That's not true, because you always get different jobs. But like you're at a point where like if you're not going to do it now, you're not going to do it. So you might as well do it.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, yeah, I think like really specifically, right? If you want to talk about where we are as a sector, and I've been thinking about this a lot recently, right? Because a lot of the stuff I'm working on is like permissioned kind of in the future, right? But a lot of the analysis I'm doing is of the systems we currently have, which are permissionless. And I think there's going to be a really interesting point, basically, for those of us that have some element of cypherpunk still in us, right? That want to think it's possible to coordinate without necessarily like, you know, all the checks and balances and yada, 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 yada. And I think this is why, like, as an aside, I think this is why, like, redefining what crypto assets actually are, saying, look, is it a form of community credit? Is it? Da, 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 because it's obviously not money, it's not secured by anything, it's too volatile. But like really clearly defining like what it is we're trying to do with these incentive systems, like are we just going to do them with crypto assets, in which case fine, it's possibly something of akin to community credit and a multilateral community credit of a form, not capital C credit, but just, you know, a simplified version of credit. Is it something that needs money, in which case we need a stable coin, we need something else, we need something with stable value linked to entropy, blah 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 blah. But like that understanding, I think is happening. Like you're seeing that, we've seen that, we've talked about it on the podcast with the development of stable coins and yada yada. And you were just alluding it to there, you know, right place and right time, possibly for all of us to now like take advantage of that. But like what's really, really interesting to me is whether or not there is still legs or there is a life in the future for the permissionless ecosystem in its current form or in a different form or with the different assets. Because that to me is the most interesting question in crypto, right? Is a CBDC is kind of boring. It's necessary, but boring. A stablecoin is necessary, but boring. It's just private money. It's the same as Visa sequencing your transactions for you, right? The money is actually kind of flowing via a clearance network. It's not really money. It's private money. Whether you can do the permissionless thing and actually also have stable means of exchange is the only interesting question in crypto to me, I think, honestly. can you program incentive systems, automated incentive systems with human intervention? Because that's what we've seen in the cosmos, right? Build DAOs and they will come and they will manipulate the ledger. And maybe that's fine because every human system gets changed.
Yeah.
But can we turn those systems into something useful with more stable value, with better tooling? I think there is still a problem there, and there is still a possibility there. And I just don't know the answer because it's a big question for smarter people than me. But that's the thing I think about all the time now. I'm like, is there a future for the permissionless ecosystem? And I think it's really interesting. Well, it matters.
It might, I don't know. It seems like that would be phase. We built these permissionless systems. We modeled an ecosystem that creates those situations to make that possible. Then it becomes viable enough that you have large financial institutions that discard all that and copy it and build their own permission systems, right? Which means the answer to your question is no. And then the next iteration, people say, why the fuck isn't this integrating, or why isn't this visible or something else? And maybe that comes back around where we take on some of the original thesis and re-inject that into something that is.
This is back to the heart of it, right? We want to know my thesis about, right? Why do we care about decentralization? What is the thing?
It makes us feel good.
Yeah, right. It makes me feel great to feel like there's 175 validators on the network. I'll tell you that for nothing. 150, not so much, but 175. It's like, you know, the Drake fucking meme. Meme. It's like 150, 175. Let's go. But like, you know, it's like, obviously it's not systemic resilience. Exactly. It's kind of like a performative, it's like decentralization theater, right? We all talk about that all the time. And it's not resilient. It's not like immutability, because we rewrite ledgers all the time for loads of reasons. Yeah. Right. So yeah, it's like, okay, yeah. Well, it's something else. Like, it's like, I have this idea that and other people have had it too. It's not just mine, but like this idea, it's just opportunism, right? That's the first thing that Satoshi wrote about in the fucking Bitcoin white paper, right? It's just opportunistic stealing. It's like that's the minimum threshold that people care about. Is you can't just like steal something because you feel like it. That's the minimum level of trust. And actually, like, if we get 10,000 people saying, well, we're going to steal your thing, it legitimizes itself. So I don't know that immutability is a thing we care about. I don't know that decentralization has a fixed meaning that we care about. I think the thing that probably we give a shit about is ownership, and it's like agency, right? We want to have agency over our ownership of the asset, over the thing, or whatever. And we don't feel like we have ownership, or at the very least, we don't feel like we have agency in other parts of the economy. Yeah. And that's why permissionlessness is an interesting problem that still has a life to it, I think, because agency, political agency, economic agency, access to money, access to opportunity have always been the only ball game in town for policy. I guess at some level, or one of the most, it's the economy stupid, right? It's that same political argument. I don't know. So permissionlessness, I don't know. I really hope, like you say, we can take the tools that we develop in this period and turn them into something more interesting and more inclusive than just Visa run stable coins. Because who cares if Visa run stable coins, man? Unless Visa want to work with our company, in which case we will absolutely consult for you. We know lots
reach
about
out to me,
stable coins and decentralization.
Info at InnoCast.
Exactly. Envoys.io.
It's still a stupid.
It's such a
company.
Fine line between stupid and clever.
Yeah, it's just a little turnabout.
He really is.
Oh, dear. You know, and the most important.
I mean, honestly, the idea of Chase or whatever else using a stable, like, it's such a fine line, like between permissionless to permissioned. From their perspective, I mean, there's ownership there. I get it, but in the grand scheme of things, it's such a fine line. Like, and from, I don't know.
And those guys are literally, you know, they are. If anything goes wrong at the moment, they're using public blockchains to do various pilots and whatever. If anything goes wrong,
Chainlink and everybody
else.
They
literally have a Postgres database running. If anything goes wrong, they're just gonna go, okay, let's abandon the source of truth on the blockchain and check Postgres. Like, you know they are, of course. But it's like, you know, for the rest of us that don't want an intermediary, like, it's back to the, like, all, it's back to the boring shit, the basis points, the actual inclusion, the actual transactions. It's back to privacy, confidentiality, all that kind of stuff that people talked about in the early days of cryptocurrencies. All of those things are still relevant and true and important. It's just that I don't know.
People say that are important, but will give that up instantly.
Yes.
For convenience or for some other type of structure, right? Like it's tough to live your life by those rules in those situations, right? Because you end up, you're forced to give those things up, like at the smallest point of making something easier or making something, you know, more straightforward or easier to understand or whatever else.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. But like, you know, we have HTTPS everywhere, right? There are sometimes examples of when these things do just start working, like, you know, internet carriers just carrying each other's traffic. Like sometimes a solution, the infrastructure or the rails that lead to a solution working become the path of least resistance and actually do facilitate a better outcome for everybody. And, you know, you're talking earlier about like, oh, long-term thinking's gone out the window. Well, you know what? Like, the most important part of long-term thinking is belief that another world is possible. And that sounds cheesy, but I think actually it's very, very relevant for where we are as a space, where it's just like, okay, I think there are actually some very harsh lessons we have to look at with where we are currently in permissionless systems. We all know about it. We've been talking about on this podcast for years about the good and the bad, but it's like, we can also imagine a future where we solve some of those problems and we still continue doing a cool thing. Like, that's entirely possible. We just have to imagine it and then we can do it. Like, that's genuine.
More likely, like, you go solve those problems and like,
like, okay, so, well, whatever. I mean, I can use a bit of help. Like, it's
quite the royal we. Yeah, we'll solve
it. Sure. Like, but, you know, the most important thing, can we just say, that happened during the summer break was Rhino got a new logo.
We did.
It's,
and we upgraded. That's it.
It's a pretty cool new logo. And it no longer looks like the concrete company that were doing work at the building site down the road. No longer looks like the bollards that I saw in the park, or the punch bag.
What is the negative space in the Rhino? That's what I've been trying to figure out.
Oh, maybe it's a, is it a, it
looks like a finger or something.
Maybe, is it phallic? Maybe it's phallic.